Good evening, everyone. So as Father Eric Mason mentioned at the beginning of Mass, my name is Deacon Matthew McCarthy, and first of all, I want to give thanks to Father Tom Lynch, your pastor here, my professor also, for inviting me over to celebrate this liturgy with you. It's wonderful to be here. It's my first time here in Lindsay, as a matter of fact. I'm studying for the Archdiocese of Toronto, and God willing, I will be ordained a priest this coming May, 2017, on May 13th. And hopefully you all can remember that because it's the 100-year anniversary of Our Lady of Fatima. So when that day comes, promise me you'll keep myself and four other men for the Diocese of Toronto in your prayers. I'm not sure if you've seen a somewhat recent car commercial on television of the new Mazda CX-5. And it's a commercial that's interesting because it shows two brand new parents walking out of a hospital. They've just given birth to their firstborn child. And the camera shows the father placing the baby in the car, this new car, this SUV, Mazda SUV, and the couple begins to drive away. And the camera's on the face of the father, and on his face is a look of confidence. And there's a voice in the background speaking, presumably the thoughts that are going through the mind of the father. And this voice is saying things like, "You've got this. You've got what it takes. You've baby-proofed the house. You've bought this nice, safe SUV. You've read all the baby manuals. You have what it takes to do this." And then the camera immediately goes to the back seat where the child is, and the child begins to scream and cry for no reason at all. And then the camera goes back to the face of the father, and he just has this look of defeat on his face, like, okay, maybe I don't got this. Maybe I don't have what it takes. And this question, do I have what it takes, I think is a question that we all ask. It runs through every facet of our life, whether we're trying out for a sports team as a child, or we're about to write an exam, or we're about to go into a job interview, whatever the case may be, we're always asking this question, do I have what it takes? And as Christians, it's natural for us to ask this question as well. When it comes to following Jesus, do I have what it takes to do that? Because as we all know, following Jesus, especially this day and age, is definitely a challenge. So I think it's natural for us to ask this question, do I have what it takes to follow Jesus? But in God's ordering of things, it's not necessarily the question we need to be asking. Do I have what it takes? You see, the truth is that apart from God and His grace, you and I can do absolutely nothing. And Jesus Himself is very clear on that. In the Gospel of John, He says, "I am the vine, and you are the branches. Cut off from me, you can do nothing." He's pretty emphatic about that. He doesn't just say, "Without me, you're just weak. Without me, you're severely disadvantaged." No, He says, "Without me, you can do nothing." So you and I can be as ready and as qualified as we can be, but in God's ordering of things, human strength and human capability really doesn't amount to a whole lot. It might amount to something in the corporate world. You need to be on top of your game. In the athletic world, whatever the case may be. But in God's ordering of things, which is really the most important ordering of things, human strength and human ability does not count for a whole lot. You and I don't pose any obstacle to God for Him doing His work. And to prove this, both the Old and the New Testament show us what kind of people God chooses to do His most important work. So, for example, in today's gospel, we have a great example of this. It says, "As Jesus was walking by the Sea of Galilee, He saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew." Now, we know that these men, Simon and Andrew, would later go on to be apostles for Jesus. In other words, they would be Jesus' first representatives of Himself on earth. That's a pretty big task. That's a pretty tall order. And we know that Peter, Simon, as he's called in this gospel, would go on to be the first pope of that group of 12, the 12 apostles. Now, there's no one on earth that could take up that task. God doesn't care how smart you are, how holy you are, how intelligent or how qualified you are. No one can really, humanly speaking, be a representative of Christ on earth, let alone be the pope. To be an alter Christus, that is to be another Christ, which the apostles were meant to be, humanly speaking, it's impossible. And yet, Jesus chose men like Peter and Andrew. Who were these men? What kind of people were they? Scripture tells us they were fishermen. Three words. They were fishermen. But these three words tell us a lot about how God likes to go about doing his work. Now, to be fair to Peter and Andrew and James and John in the gospel, they were fishermen, and fishermen weren't necessarily bad people. They weren't necessarily unintelligent. They weren't unlikable. My grandfather, for example, was born in Newfoundland. Actually, he was born on a very small island off the coast of Newfoundland. And he was a great fisherman. He wasn't a fisherman by trade, but he was surrounded by water all his life. And so he knew a thing or two about fishing. And he was just a great guy. He was a nice guy. He spoke with an accent from being from Newfoundland, as many of you probably know. He was a great fisherman, a good guy, but he's no pope. If someone went up to him and asked him, "Dolph, have you ever considered being a pope or being a cardinal, at least a cardinal?" He would be the first one to say, "You've got the wrong guy. You've got the wrong person for the job." And I'm pretty sure that Simon Peter, in today's gospel, felt the same way when Jesus called him to follow him. Simon was a fisherman. He was probably a nice guy. We don't know for sure, but he was probably a nice guy as the next person. And he spoke with an accent, like my grandfather. See, Simon Peter was from an area called Galilee among the Gentiles. And back then, Galilee among the Gentiles was sort of code for the sticks, backwood country. People in that place spoke with an accent. So why does God do this? Why does he tend to work this way? And I think it's to show us that he's quite capable of making something out of nothing. Or rather, taking something which is ordinary and making it extraordinary, as he did with Peter, the fisherman, when he said, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. I will make you fishers of people." In other words, your profession, that which you did and benefited yourself, fishing, I will take that and turn it into something that's going to benefit the entire history, all of history. That's what God does. So a gospel like this really makes us ask this question: what in your life seems ordinary? Don't be surprised if that's the very idea God, the very area, rather, that God wants to enter in order to take you to a higher pitch, in order for him to use you for his purposes. Now, you might be thinking, okay, I understand what you're saying, but you don't know me. You don't know the past I've had. I'm not even ordinary. I'm wretched. Like, you just don't know what I've done. God would not he couldn't use someone like me, and neither would he desire to use someone like me. And if these are sort of the sort of thoughts that are running through your mind, I want to direct our attention now to another area of today's gospel, in the beginning of today's gospel, where the gospel writer says that Jesus came from Zebulun and Naphtali. Zebulun and Naphtali. Now, historically, this area is where Judaism basically fell apart. Just the practice of the religion was so weak, and the Jews in that area, really, their defenses fell apart, and they allowed their neighboring enemies to invade that area. In other words, Zebulun and Naphtali became a real sore spot on the map, a real sore spot in the history of Israel. And so Zebulun and Naphtali, unsurprisingly, became synonymous with God-forsakenness, with absolute nothingness, with embarrassment. In fact, when Nathanael, one of Jesus' other disciples, learned that Jesus came from this very area, Nazareth being a town in Zebulun and Naphtali, in that historic area, when he found out that Jesus came from this area, he said, quite sarcastically, he said, "Can anything good come from that area?" That's a pretty strong statement. Can anything good, in other words, can just one good thing come from this area? Well, this is where God himself chose to come from, Zebulun and Naphtali. And a gospel like this really hits home for me, especially the lesson that God can certainly work with someone as ordinary with me. I'm not going to get into my whole vocation story of how I ended up being a deacon and, God willing, a priest, but let's just say that my vocation story is a good mix of God using what's ordinary in my life and what's wretched in my life to do his purposes, to carry out his purposes as a priest. Growing up, I loved to play sports. Sports was such a huge part of my life. All the way up to university, I studied sports. I entered York University studying kinesiology and health sciences. So it was a huge part of my life growing up. And growing up, being a teenager and a young adult and being on a sports team, as you can probably imagine, I was involved in a lot of what's called locker room talk. Locker talk, what is it? It's basically conversations that go on between athletes in the context of a locker room. And if you're an athlete or have had experience with this, you know that the conversations that go on, basically locker talk, is not the most virtuous conversations that guys could be having. So why am I saying this? I'll just leave it at that, really. But I just find it so interesting that God can, that he called me from that environment, that he called me from that environment to doing what I'm doing now. From locker talk to really talking about God and how great he's been in my life. God's just got a great sense of humor. So a gospel like this makes us ask, what in your life and my life resemble the area of Zebulun and Naphtali? What area in your life is synonymous with God-forsakenness? That not even God can fix this situation. That it's so far gone. What areas in your life resemble Zebulun and Naphtali? And these things in our life, we might say, disqualify us from doing the will of God. And they might make us think, you know, I don't have what it takes. But this Sunday, this liturgy, perhaps this is a great opportunity for us to ask, to dare Jesus, and ask him if these places are the very places where his light will shine.